has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Light it up.
Punch it.
Welcome to Unmistakably Star Wars, your source for a high-quality, informative, and entertaining look into the Star Wars galaxy. So strap yourself in, because here's where the fun begins.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to, by the way, the Unmistakably Star Wars Mandalorian Recap Review Show, full of spoilers, so hopefully you've watched it. And, I mean, my goodness, if you haven't watched it by now, what are you waiting on? That was exciting. Exciting episode. You'll notice that I am not Gina, nor do I sound like Gina. I think she's actually auditioning for being the nanny of Yoda. We kidded about that last episode, but I think she actually may have the gig because she is taking a hiatus here, and that's the only thing I can think of that would tear her away. So for her sake, I know she'd want to get that job, but for our sake, we hope that she does it and she comes back to us. But whatever way, it'll be... It'll be a win no matter what. So I am Carl, the normal co-host, but I am hosting this week, and I am joined by Barb the Canadian. Hello, Barb.
Hey, everybody. How's everybody doing?
And we also have the person who has been singing the interludes for the last couple episodes, Meg. So let's all hear a round of applause for Meg's awesome singing that has helped out.
Hello, everyone, and thank you. And thank you, Carl, for asking. It's been a ton of fun recording those songs. I don't get to do stuff like that all the time, so.
It's fun. It's fun. I do have a little bit of creativity, and it's more in the writing. You know, my singing is terrible, so I definitely appreciate you helping out with those. Just to kind of, I mean, it just makes it ours a little, you know, we got our own little more original spin on some stuff that other people don't have. And I just appreciate you helping my dreams be fulfilled. So thank you very much, Meg.
Aww.
Alrighty. So as you know, what we do is we normally start with what is going to get the bounty this week, and so the bounty just being whatever was very positive and our favorite part of the show, and then we'll also mention things that should have been frozen in carbonite, meaning we didn't like it, we could freeze it and not see it again, just put it in the cargo hold of the ship and leave it there. So that being said, we'll start with Meg. Meg, what got your bounty this week?
You know, there's so much. So much. And
yes.
Barb and I briefly spoke about this before the call. It's like, oh my gosh. But I think the top tier of the cake for me was that very end moment with Moff Gideon and the dark saber.
Yeah. That was epic.
So good. Yeah. Just like the way he was standing and like the wind at his cape, and he's standing on top of the tie, and he had the dark saber in his hand. It was just sort of very like epic moment. So that was definitely like the top moment for me.
And yeah, and we hadn't seen the dark saber except in an animated series, and I thought they did a really good job in the live action version of the dark saber.
Yeah, it was awesome,
great.
And I loved it too, and I knew how much Barb loved Rebels, and I was like, well, that's going to be Barb's probably number one. It could have been my number one, and I wasn't sure how much Meg had watched Rebels and maybe Clone Wars too, because it showed up there as well, but Meg's very familiar with it, as we see here now, so it is, that was kind of a almost, I don't know, it was awesome, and then almost an infuriating way to end the season, because you got to leave us with that? We're not gonna get another how long before we see that in action, so
leave us
that was a great
8 months with that.
Yeah,
woo, they are so cool.
You know what I'm gonna do with that is I'm gonna take this 8 months to rewatch Rebels, rewatch all the Clone Wars, so that I can.
Good idea.
Because I have to go online because I couldn't remember what Sabine did with the Darksaber because it had been a while. So I was like, okay,
right,
where was it supposed to be and what does this mean? So I'm just, that's what I'm going to do with my time for those 8 months that we have to wait for The Mandalorian.
Okay. And while we're there, Barb, why don't you go ahead and tell us what won the bounty for you?
Well, I mean, as Meg said, it's not easy to narrow this down to one. And I literally have a list of like six or seven in front of me and was waiting to hear what other people would say. So I won't say the Darksaber. I absolutely loved the Mandalorian getting his insignia. And
that was a great moment.
It was such a great moment because I was actually like sitting in anticipation, wondering what his insignia would be. And I saw it and I'm like, that is one cool looking insignia. I can't wait for a pin, a t-shirt, whatever with that on it.
Yeah.
But also what it symbolized to him. And like I said, I only watched it once, or maybe I didn't say it on air. I only had a chance to watch the episode once today. So I need to watch it again. But he said something about it being coming from two places or his two, because he wasn't born on Mandalore. He's a foundling. We know that. And so I think what it represented is that he's adopted the creed of Mandalore. You know, he talked about it being a creed, but that he's from another place, not Mandalore. And I think that was the symbolicness of his insignia. And I want to look at it more closely. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not sure all of the meaning behind it. But I just loved that moment because he talked about the insignia in an episode prior. And for them to end the season with him getting that, it was almost like a rite of passage. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I think it was all that you said, but it was, you know, being it was the Mudhorn. And what she said first was, when she put it on, was, you are now a clan of two. It's almost like they're starting over. And that he refused it or wouldn't accept it when they talked about it earlier because he had an enemy had helped him and it wasn't a good kill. But now they're to the point where they're not enemies. There's a relationship where they are, as she says, you're as his father. So that now it is a legitimate because even though he thought they were enemies, they really weren't, haven't ever been enemies. And I'll talk about more about that when we do the recap. But there's a theme that's really kind of been developing, and I think they really hit it home a lot with this episode, and especially in the part where he got the signet. And I thought that was, like you said, yeah, that was really good, and that was one of the moments I thought about doing myself. What did you think about the signet, Meg?
I just loved, like, how... like that whole sort of presentation of it was you know, and the armor is so cool. She's just a really cool character.
And oh, yeah.
Like, the whole process of that was just, I guess I didn't really have like as much of an emotional moment to that. Cause I think there was so much going on, you know, but that was a cool moment.
Yeah, and look, you wanted to say something, Barb? I think my question cut you off.
It's okay. I just want to clarify. So you're saying that the insignia has more to do that he's a clan of two with the child instead of coming from two places?
Yeah.
That's how I saw it, too.
That they're kind of as one now, and like I said, it was something that he wouldn't accept it, because when he came, he was by himself anyway. He had turned him over.
Yeah.
To the Imperials, and so now they're back, and you know their whole relationship dynamic has changed since that time, and so it's not a bad kill. They aren't enemies; they're a family, and they're a clan of two because everybody else is wiped out. It's almost like they're going to be starting over, and maybe they'll expand, find other foundlings or whatever. But they're at the very moment, at least, just a clan of two.
Okay, so this is why I like watching it more than once, and I absolutely love that reason for his insignia 10,000 times more, because it was so cool to see the child, like, bonded with him in that way, and for, I can't remember the character's name who does the armor, but for her to say that he's, like, a father to this child, it hit my heart in that place, and near the end of the episode, you see the child come up to his leg and kind of grasp onto his leg, and he picks him up. And I'm just like, I love everything about this so much. So yeah.
It was good. I was well, I guess for my bounty moment, I mean, it was everything, you know, like you said, you could just go through, and we're going to go through the recap, so we'll talk about how great every scene was, but it's like everything was awesome, awesome, awesome. The next thing was awesome, but just IG-88. Now, for some reason, you know, I was just thinking he should have just gotten on the ship and left, but I guess...
IG-11.
Mm-hmm. IG-11. And we're going to do that all the time. Thank you for correcting
me. I know,
right? it's like we know it, but it's like when you start IG, 88 just comes out automatically.
Yeah.
But as the IG-11 is, you know, he got YOLO, and I thought, well, he'll just get on the ship, I guess. Maybe he'll fly in with the ship and shoot. No, he's cruising in on the speeder bike. I was like, well, and I guess the only thing I could think of was when he said, well, you know, I'm doing my duty to protect, and he's putting that protection out there, not just for the baby, but for the others in the group as well. And as later we talks about it, maybe a protection of the others is YOLO's or the assets for the child's best chance anyway. So maybe that's why he's doing it that way. But just as he came speeding by and just, you know, as definitely different than a stormtrooper, he's just point blank hitting everybody, boom, 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 one shot as efficiently as possible as he's flying on a speeder bike and having to carry a baby. And I'm like, well, that's kind of dangerous, which, you know, at one point he has to, which is, I still love the way they mechanically make the body look, where when YOLO's on the front, he's getting shot at, he spins it around, but he's still shooting, his arms are still, they come back over that
I
way.
I know. Mm-hmm.
That part
was incredible.
Scene, yeah. They did a great job with that. So.
Yeah.
All right, so we have talked about what's won the bounties. Now we're going to say, what do we not like, or what was maybe something we could have done without and just put it in carbonite and forget about it? And we'll start with Barb this time. Barb, was there anything that you just weren't crazy about in the episode?
Honestly, I can't think of anything I didn't like. Like, I keep going through the episode in my head. I'm like, oh, I love that part. Oh, I love that part. Oh, mm-hmm. I love that part. And even the things that maybe aren't at the top of the list, I'm like, well, I didn't not like that. Like, that new stormtrooper that came in with the flame, and mm-hmm. He had the red stripes on his mask and on his suit. I don't know that I've ever seen a stormtrooper like that before.
Right.
And... that was really cool, but mm-hmm. out of my list of cool things, I think that's at the bottom. So okay. There you go.
Well, that was, yeah, it's like you're kind of having to say what is the worst of all this good stuff, not that it was bad in and of itself, so I agree with that. Meg, what did you find anything that you didn't like about the episode?
Okay, so I thought, like, the beginning was funny at first with the two troopers on the speeder bikes, and then I'm like, wait, what is it? Why aren't they just sitting there? Like, it's funny, but then they smack, then they're like hitting baby, like, no, don't.
Yes.
That went a little
yeah.
too
oh
far
yeah I
with
did
the
not like
of
the hitting
baby
Yoda.
Yoda, like, okay,
that's right,
they like bopped him on the head, one of them did the first time, and I'm like, okay, and then it like basically like punched him. I mean, that was sort of a very jarring moment, and maybe didn't need the second one. Probably didn't. Yeah.
I think it was actually three times.
What's that, Barb?
I said I think it was actually three times.
Was it three times?
Did it?
I think
the first trooper did it two times, and then the third trooper got bit.
Oh,
and I think he punched
him. Yeah, that was
and
a little too
much. The bite.
Oh, it was definitely too much. So that takes mine right there.
All right. We agree.
Yes. Yeah.
The punching of baby YOLO is not going to fly with anybody.
Nope.
So that, you know, it just goes to, they always do that, though. They do things to make us not like characters. And then people are like, I don't, you know, and they get mad about it. But the design is to not like the character, because then it justifies, you know, how IG 11, almost at 88 again, but IG-11 just sort of, I mean, breaks bones and wrist and just smashes heads into speeders till the speeders are bent. So it's like, we don't feel so bad about that. It's like, yeah,
well,
they deserved
it. Well, I think
it.
That was it. Like, well, that was it about this scene that I absolutely love. And to be honest, I did watch the intro twice because my husband came home as we started it. I'm like, okay, I'll restart it. So that was a really cool scene to watch twice. Just watch him give those scout troopers what they deserve for what they did to baby Yoda.
Yes. I guess for me, I guess just the fact that it's ending. I mean, I'm kind of mad. Like I said earlier, they drop a huge bomb, which, of course, that's how especially serialized storytelling goes, is when they're when there is going to be a break. They give you something that makes you go, ah, I want to see more, and then you got to wait. So just the fact that this it's eight episodes and it's over already, I'm missing it already. So I am – that's the only thing I can think that was bad, just the fact that it's ended, and that's the last one for a while.
Yeah.
Well, we've done what we liked and what we didn't like about the episode, so we're going to take a break. And then we're going to come back, and then we're going to sort of break down the episode scene by scene.
Yoda baby, you're the cutest thing I did see, oh me. I'm in an awful tight spot, Yoda baby, so use the force to help me tonight. Yoda baby, your eyes are so big and brown, so round. They're seeing all my trouble, Yoda baby, so use the force to help me tonight. Your adorable and quivering ears shake much more when you sense fear. Just think, I could have died if I didn't always have you near. Yoda baby, escape in your floating bin, stay in. It's a dangerous world, Yoda baby, so use the force to help me tonight. Yoda cutie, we really must discuss what you eat, frog feet. I have to tell you that's gross, Yoda baby, so use the force to help me tonight. Bounty hunters trying to kill you. Why that is, I haven't got a clue. But if you fall into wrong hands, what kind of evil would they make you do? Yoda baby, I hope this all turns out good. It should. I know you'll do your best, Yoda baby, so use the force to help me tonight.
Okay, we're back now, and we're, you know, we have already talked about the opening because that was the part where we had some trouble with what happened with some baby YOLO abuse there, the stormtroopers. But this scene, it lets you know that Taika Waititi was directing this episode. So if you're not familiar with him, he also did Thor Ragnarok. So it is clearly in his style. And there was articles that came out when they were still making it and when they talked about him directing an episode. And he was saying, you know, he has to stay in the Star Wars lane. He can't do what he normally likes to do with his humor, but he could a little. He could play with a little bit, and we totally saw that in that first opening scene.
Oh, yeah. I loved how, they keep radioing in, and he's like, well, he just killed a bunch of stormtroopers, and then the second time he's like, he just killed somebody for cutting him off. And I was like, this guy, this is kind of funny.
It is. It was like, especially when it was like, they kind of use that against each other. Did he just say that he killed 12 of his own men? It's like, yeah. I guess he was sending a message, and I get the message. Do you get the message? And then when he kept wanting, the second trooper wanted to keep C in the bag, he was like, well, it might be dead. The last thing you want to do is just open a bag to Moff Gideon and what he's been doing to the people who are interrupting him and not failing him. And show him something dead. I mean, you might want to check. So they use that against each other. I thought that was pretty humorous.
Oh, yeah. That whole beginning, I absolutely loved. And I didn't realize that Taika Waititi directed that. Mm-hmm. And it totally makes sense now that you say it.
Yeah. Now, Meg or Barb, did y'all recognize the voices behind the silly stormtroopers that we saw at the beginning?
So I definitely thought they were familiar, but it like mm-hmm. it did not click. And then I went on Twitter later, and I think mm-hmm. one was Jason Sudeikis, and the other right. I can't remember the other name, but
his name is Adam Pally, and I didn't know him. I looked him up too, and saw his picture. And it's like, okay, I recognize him. I've seen him in stuff, but I couldn't tell what I'd seen him in. But mm-hmm. But Jason Sudeikis, and again, I was like, as far as it was killing me. It's like like Horatio Sands in that first episode. It's like, I know that guy, but I just couldn't. It wouldn't click in my mind. But once you see who it is, you're like, yep, I can hear it now. So, mm-hmm. But I thought they did a funny job, and just how meta it got about. Yes, we all make fun of how bad stormtroopers, their aim is.
Had a
joke about it in the Prisoner episode where the guy was like, yeah, I'm a Imperial sharpshooter. And they're like, oh, that's a big deal. It's like, no, I'm not a stormtrooper. But they were like, sitting real close to that can or what a piece of machinery, whatever it was, and just coming nowhere close. And so all that and was just, just very funny about that part. But I just kind of want to ask, and we could go with Barb. You've kind of touched on this, but did that take you out of the show as intense it has been? We just, that last episode, were worried because Baby Yoda was taken by these scout troopers. Quill is dead on the ground. What's going to happen? And then the first thing we have is this, and it's kind of a long scene, long humorous scene before we really get back into action. Did that take you out of it, or did you enjoy it?
I actually really enjoyed it. It didn't take me out of it at all because my concern was with Yolo, mm-hmm. the child, Baby Yoda, whatever we're going to call him. But my concern was with him, and that scene, I knew that he was right there. And mm-hmm. so I'm like, okay, he's alive. They're mistreating him, so I definitely wanted to do what IG-88 did to them.
IG-11. We all do it.
Yeah, see, IG-88. Look at that.
It's like we hear other people doing it. We don't hear ourselves doing it.
It just, you're right, it just rolls off the tongue, IG-88. Mm-hmm. But, so, it didn't take me out of it at all. I really loved the humor of it. I loved them doing target practice on what looked like a little mine. Mm. And, when the first guy missed, I'm like, oh, here we go. And it was hilarious. And I was watching it with Steve, and Steve kind of laughed hysterically. He's like, they're totally playing on the fact that they can't shoot anything. Yeah. I'm like, exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, IG-11 comes in and just whoops ass, mm-hmm. Does exactly what those two scout troopers deserve. So it didn't take me out of the moment at all, especially when IG-11 got on the speeder bike with the child mm-hmm. and you knew that he was safe.
So, Meg, in answering that question, I want to hear whether or not it took you out of it. But when you do answer it, I want you to kind of add this to it. I think back to Solo and how they fired or parted ways with Lord and Miller. And Lord and Miller kind of have, I don't think it's as much as Taika Waititi, but they do have still some of that very, unique humor, something that may or may not fit within Star Wars. And I always kind of wondered, we heard rumors that they weren't doing a lot of shooting. They'd sit in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. They'd do a lot of talking. They would go off script and do a lot of improvising. And those sort of things is what maybe had them part ways with Lucasfilm and Disney. But could Star Wars have a full movie that would be like that? Like something, say like a Lego movie or a Thor Ragnarok. Could we actually have a Star Wars movie? Would the fans stand for it? And we know that's split in half. We know that already. But, would the fans allow Star Wars to be a little more lighthearted and not treated as the sacred and holy movie that it is or franchise that it is. So I toss that to you, Meg, and just your feelings about that.
So I guess to first comment on the beginning, that didn't really take me out of it. I was just like, let's go, because I was trying to watch this before I went to work. And I'm like, I want to get some stuff in here before I have to leave for work. And then I had to watch the rest of my lunch. It was just more of like anticipation. I'm like, let's go. Mm-hmm. Quit talking. Mm-hmm. So it didn't, it really was funny. You know, there's a lot of Star Wars media out there. And I think there are like the Lego Star Wars is that humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I don't know if they're doing that with like Lego Star Wars that they would do that in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, not to say that I wouldn't mind it. I mean, I love funny humor, you know, like stupid, mm-hmm. sometimes dumb jokes and play on words and, you yeah. know, being meta about things and kind of like mm-hmm. Robot Chicken, you know, when they do their stuff is hilarious. I mean, you know, they're just kind of right. making fun of Star Wars in the sort of best way you can make fun of Star Wars and not putting it down necessarily. So I don't know. Like I said, I wouldn't mind it. I don't know if they'd ever do mm-hmm. it if they're already doing it in other, you know,
mm-hmm.
other forms of it.
Right. Right. Barb, do you think fandom would stand for a Thor Ragnarok style movie?
I wouldn't mind it. Again, you know, I don't think I'd mind it, but I don't know. I don't know. What do you think, Barb?
I don't think it's Star Wars for a full-length movie. It's definitely Marvel, you know. Mm-hmm. I love seeing that kind of humor in Marvel. They do it really well. Star Wars, I felt like The Rise of Skywalker had just the right amount of humor
mm-hmm.
for the feature length that it was to, you know, just to add that, you know, that you need that. But anything more beyond that, like a Lego movie, is, to me, that's not Star Wars. You know, you mm-hmm. can get that when you watch the Lego Star Wars animated shorts, you know?
Yeah.
And that's my opinion. Maybe there's others out there that would like a full feature film that has more of that humor in it. I just, it doesn't seem Star Wars to me to do that.
Yeah, I think that's how the people in control feel about it. And I could definitely see, because I think Star Wars fans and Marvel fans are different in how much, I guess, awe and respect we have to show the characters. I'm not saying all of them, but I would say there's more of that in Star Wars. We have to, you know, take this very seriously, and we have to treat these characters with respect. Where comic books come from a 70-year history of things going on before they even started doing movies, or at least the modern movies. And so they have, you know, comic books run the gambit of being a funny book or a serious book or real gritty. And so, yeah, I think Marvel has a lot more room to play just because of the history and just how comic book readers have to approach the books themselves for years and years and years. So I think it would be hard to do. I would love to see it myself, but I think it would be hard to do. And I think there would be, you know, we already have revolts going on after every movie exactly. now. So that would just be one more reason for some people to disagree.
Exactly.
Well, we talked about IG-11 rescuing Yolo. So he comes zipping into the town there. And before he gets there, Moff Gideon is setting up a E-Web heavy repeating blaster. So we're getting serious again. We're getting intense. And so, Meg, what did you feel about our heroes kind of stuck in the cantina looking like there was no way out?
Yeah, I was real nervous because I, from the beginning, I'm like, if they kill off Cara Dune, I will riot. And yeah. I was really worried about her from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I was nervous. Obviously it ended fine, but with her, but there was a lot of, I was just like on the edge of my seat at that point. Yeah.
And then they do yet again another throwback, which I love all the things that remind me of something else I've seen in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Some people call it just fan service and they don't like it, but to me that's what I've loved about this show. Especially they are looking for a way out, and the sewer grate, which looks just like the one in the Death Star in A New Hope, is the way out. But they don't have, I guess, Chewie's bowcaster or the blaster that Han had to blow it open, so they're having a little trouble with that. But as they're trying to get out, Moff Gideon starts telling us how smart he is and how much he knows. So we learn Cara Dune, her name is Carcynthia Dune. I think he said like Cynthia.
It sounded like Cara Cynthia.
Yeah.
Dune, I think is what I heard.
Yes. But do you remember where she was from?
Alderaan.
Yes.
Alderaan, yes.
Yes, I loved that.
So why did you love it, Barb?
Well, so when he first said it, I'm like, okay, I started doing the math. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm like, okay, so she had to have been young when she left the planet because we're after Return of the Jedi. Maybe not too young, but, you know, she obviously wasn't on the planet when it blew
right.
up. So I was trying to get a backstory mm-hmm. for Cara Dune, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And in that quick moment, I'm like, oh my gosh, what happened with her leaving the planet, becoming a rebel, what do they call
shock,
it? Rebel,
shock trooper.
Shock trooper, thank you. I was thinking electric in my head. I'm like, what? A shock trooper. So, like, I just feel like, you know, either in books or, you know, something separate, we're going to get more about Cara Dune. And I cannot wait. Mm. You know, finding out that she's from Alderaan is just, there's so much potential and it's so exciting. And I'm, you know, like Meg said, I'm just glad that she didn't die because that was a stressful moment
yeah.
all, for all of them.
What did you think about her being from Alderaan, Meg?
I thought that was a cool moment. Not something like ever really thought about. I never really thought about her backstory mm-hmm. other than that she, you know, had fought in the rebellion. Mm-hmm. And so and I'm surprised I didn't go through the math like Barb did, like trying to figure out ages and things like that. So now I'm going to be thinking about that a lot more for sure. Well,
to me, it was because she wanted to, it was so easy to get her involved when you just said there's Imperials involved. When everything else, whenever you bring anything else up, she's like, I'm not doing it. I want to stay low. I don't want to get caught. I have, you know, people after me. I'm fine where I am. I want to get out of the action. And then it's like, he's not a warlord. He's Imperial. I'm in, you know? So to me, it explained a little more how much she hated the Empire because they destroyed her planet. So, and Barb talked about having a backstory. In my mind, the backstory is that she wasn't necessarily any kind of shock trooper or soldier, but when they blew up her planet, she decided, okay, it's on now. And so that just to me explained how much she did, her hatred for the Empire was, you know, anybody could really hate the Empire, but hers is probably a little bit hotter than most people. Then we get the Mandalorian's name. So it's he is the decommissioned Mandalorian hunter, Din Djarin. I guess he's going to get unchained. Din Djarin are unchained here in a little bit, but...
Carl!
Right?
The D is silent, you know. The D is silent. But when he's talking about, you know, he's like, maybe he's heard of the songs of... Did y'all catch what Moff Gideon was referring to? And he's talking about where he might have heard about how the Imperials had used guns like that E-Web to take out Mandalorians?
That was when we got the flashback mm-hmm. for the Mandalorian as a child and being hidden by his parents. Mm-hmm. And so this is where I was like, okay, all the Mandalorians that were coming down, this was a direct link to Rebels
mm-hmm.
with the military type Mandalorians. I can't remember.
The Death Watch.
Yep. Death Watch.
Death Watch. And that's why they were all wearing the same
colors and
uniform,
the,
you know.
And the,
yeah, the same colors and everything like that.
And it had the Death Watch symbol on their shoulder, which is also the sign of
exactly
of House Vizsla. That we'll talk about that in a minute. It kind of confused me a minute because it's like Death Watch, what we've seen in Clone Wars, was a terrorist group and they were trying to kind of have more battles and wars, but this one seemed to be kind of rescuing and not working with separatists. So that was a little bit like, what's the story there? But go ahead, Barb.
Well, so I think that's the connection to this weapon that he was talking about, because it gave that flashback to the Mandalorian. Is that right? Because we saw, was it battle droids? You know, mm-hmm. the ones that were shooting everybody. They're called battle droids,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
super battle
droids.
So
we saw those, or destroyers. I can't remember all the names of the Empire's droids, but so we saw those. I didn't see the weapon that he was talking about, though, except that as soon as his parents closed the door, they blew up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Mandalorian came and, yeah.
I'll give you a little hint of what, it took me a second to kind of realize it, but it's something that we may not have seen yet, but we're probably going to, see something about it coming up in the next season of the Clone Wars.
Clone Wars.
Because he mentions, he goes, you know, maybe you've heard it in the songs of the Siege of Mandalore. And the Siege of Mandalore is something that's been referenced in books and in the Clone Wars. But we haven't seen what happened. And it was basically where Ahsoka is there by herself, leading her men, Rex and everybody, without Anakin or Obi-Wan there to help. And her and Darth Maul have a confrontation. So he, because he talks to her later in Rebels about, you know, the time they spent together on Mandalore and stuff like that. So it's been hinted about, and we just had another drop about how, you know, that Din Djarin may have heard songs about that time period because it was an epic battle, and we're going to see it in this next season of Clone Wars that's going to come out on Disney Plus. But I liked how they were kind of tying those things in there like that. So, and then we, you know, we have the Greef Karga was a disgraced magistrate. So we, basically, Moff Gideon knows he's an ISB officer, we learn. And that's why the Mandalorian says, I know him. He's using my name that I only use as a child. And he was there on Mandalore during the siege. And he, or during the purge, I believe also. And he's an ISB officer, which is their intelligence branch. So he knows his stuff. He's like, yeah, we're going to give you to nightfall to come out. So now our heroes are trying to get out again. Barb mentioned the flashback. So we see him rescued by Mandalorians. But then there's IG-11 kind of finishes his run in, and he jumps off the bike, lets it smash into people, starts shooting them. And there's a big fight outside the cantina. Meg, the fight... Are you big into fights on shows, or would this one bore you? Was it pretty exciting? What did you think about this big showdown with the E-Web heavy repeater?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty exciting. I feel like the Mandalorian, a.k.a. now we can call him Din, you know, he's been in a lot of fights this season, and he seems... to come out pretty okay. Like, his Beskar holds up really well. It was interesting to see him actually really get knocked down. Not that I, like, enjoyed it, but to see him, like, okay, like, yeah, he is such a great fighter. They're all great fighters, but now we're having this moment. Like, okay, what's gonna happen? I knew he was gonna be fine, but I did have that moment. Like, oh shoot! Like, how are we gonna get out of this one now? But I thought it was really touching how Kara, like, was taking care of him and was like, "I'm not leaving you." Like, you know, that was actually a really touching moment. Of their sort of friendship developing a little bit more there, too.
Barb, you got anything to add to that?
I absolutely love this scene because I think, like, IG-11 is redeeming himself from episode one, where he wanted to kill the child. And even though he's completely reprogrammed and everything, he's fighting for the team we want him fighting for now. And it's awesome to see him taking out the stormtroopers, even with, you know, baby Yoda on his back or on his front or on his back. You know, the way that he twists and turns his arms and his body is so cool.
That was really cool.
So that was really cool to me. And, you know, we see the Mandalorian get knocked down because Moff Gideon is smart and blew the thing up, but I wasn't scared at all. I'm like, as soon as he's like, I'm not going to make it, I'm like, well, yeah, you are. And here I am thinking in my head, is it going to be Baby Yoda that heals you or something?
Yeah.
What's going to happen? Like, I'm like, how is this going to work? And then when little Yolo he uses his powers to stop the flamethrower guy.
Yeah.
And then kind of does his little passing out again. And mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, shoot, he's not going to heal him. What's going to happen? So I actually really loved seeing what happened because we get that great reveal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the Mandalorian and IG-11 are very smooth, and Kara's laying down the fire with her big gun there that she has. But I actually am gaining more respect and liking Greef Karga more as the show goes on. Didn't like him to start with, knew mm-hmm. he wasn't going to, you know, be good. But just, you know, a lot of times when you have a character like that who sort of double-crossed you earlier in the show, and when he actually snuck on the Mandalorian ship in the episode where it was the Sin, he was almost like he was letting other people do the fighting, and then he just sort of snuck in and let them maybe sort of wear him down, and he was going to get the drop on him. But in this episode, he's right out the door right behind the Mandalorian, and he's shooting, and he's holding his own too. So a lot of times they portray those characters as maybe sort of more Weasley and coward, and he's not. He's, you know, he's got his position through merit, evidently. He's evidently good at being in fights and probably a good bounty hunter in his own right. But the fact that he got out there in the middle of the fight, I enjoyed seeing him sort of, you know, not go, well, I'll let you guys do it. You guys are better equipped for it than I am. So I'm enjoying that more. And I thought that was a little joke in there, too, when they mentioned that, you know, Greef Karga saying, what do you mean you weren't born on Mandalore? You're a Mandalorian, right? And then Kara and the Mandalorian are like, well, Mandalorian is not a race. And then the next shot is Greef Karga. So they're both talking to him. They said, it's a creed. And he played Apollo Creed, you know, in Rocky. So I was like, oh, they're doing a little joke there. So maybe not. But it just sort of, you know. So I was like, yeah, he is a creed.
I did not make that connection.
Neither
that's,
did I.
That's a little far-fetched for me. I get it now. Yeah. But
I think they did it on purpose. Maybe I'm wrong because it was, you know, they just had him in the middle of the shot right before they said that line. So I was like, ah. But we did learn that, though. And there's still some confusion there as far as, okay, is it a race or is it a creed? So what do you think about that question there, Barb?
Well, I thought that was really interesting because we knew. So when he's telling Greef Karga this, we already know this as, you know, the people watching the show, because he said it in other moments, and I didn't realize that he hadn't said that to Greef Karga, mm-hmm. that, you know, he wasn't born on Mandalore, that he's a foundling, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. So he's explaining it again to us, but to the first time to him. Mm-hmm. But then he goes further to say, it's not about that. It's this religion. It's a, you know, that's what a creed is. Mm-hmm. It's this belief system that you follow, whether you were born into it or you've come into it in other ways. Mm. And so his explanation of that just kind of really solidifies the devotion that the Mandalorians have to fellow Mandalorians, whether they be foundlings that follow the creed or born there. They're all Mandalorian because they follow that code. They follow that creed. They believe in Mandalore and they're going to fight for it. And I think sometimes it even has more weight for the people that are not born into it, but the ones that are like, no, I'm going to fight for this place because what it has done for me. And I think that really shows what this Mandalorian, I can't pronounce his name that he said. I have to watch it again, but Din something.
Din Djarin.
You know, but Din Djarin. So I just feel like it really emphasizes his devotion to what he believes in, and now that devotion is to the child. So I cannot wait to see season two, and yeah, it's just, it's so good.
Mag, do you have any, you know, because, you know, George Lucas would say, and that became kind of an argument in fandom too, of whether or not even Boba Fett or Jango Fett were even Mandalorian themselves, and it had to do, it seemed to be more of where they were born when that discussion took out. So do you have any question, or do you feel like solidly that Mandalore or being Mandalorian is where you're born, or just the creed you accept?
Well, I think that it was a little confusing for me just because Mandalorians have been a part of Star Wars for a long time, whether it's, you know, in a small way with Boba Fett in the original trilogy, or diving more deep into it with the Clone Wars and Rebels. I wonder if because of the Siege of Mandalore, it became that way.
Yeah.
You know, or if, because I'm trying to think back to Rebels, and it seemed like anybody who was a Mandalorian was from Mandalore.
Yeah.
But I think it's a really beautiful thing that their openness to bring in the foundlings and then treat them as their own, you know, without question, was sort of this really beautiful thing. And in how we see a little bit later, they treat Baby Yoda, you know, that way then too. I think this is where, for me, we have more questions than answers, that I think we're going to be getting more in the Clone Wars in this final season. We'll get more of it in The Mandalorian. Hopefully we'll get a little bit more in maybe books or comics too. But I don't think we have the whole picture yet. I think we're still getting more information. So I think it's, while I'm a little confused, I'm excited about finding out more.
Well, we now go to, we're right before we go into the sewer, he has to have his helmet removed for IG-11 to help mend him. So, we have the final reveal. Pedro actually did at least show up for part of a day.
He did. Was I was actually, like, worried, did. Like, oh my gosh, what if it's not Pedro Pascal under that helmet in this moment? Maybe Taika puts himself into the show. No. But, yeah, it was nice to see his face.
So, how did you like the revealing or him taking his helmet off, at least for this one part of an episode?
I liked it. I'd always known it was Pedro Pascal, right? So I was expecting that face, and you know, he's bloodied up and a little shot up. But what was funny was I watched it with my kids for the first time, and I've never watched a Mandalorian episode the first time with them. I always watch it by myself first. So my kid next to me, she's like, "That is not what I expected him to look like."
My wife said the exact same thing, and she's not familiar with Pedro Pascal, and so she's like, not only was she like, "Well, that's not what I expected," I'm kind of disappointed. I'm like, "Well,"
so
I'm like, "Well,"
I was not disappointed at all. Like, I loved the reveal. He looked a little, you know, shabby. Yeah. He didn't have the beard that I'm used to in Game of Thrones, but that's okay. And you know, in Game of Thrones, he has an accent, and you know, he doesn't have that accent in real life. So it's just, you know, getting used to that voice and then hearing him speak without his mask on was really cool. And it, you know, it didn't seem as shocking to him to be looking at IG-11 as IG-11 took his mask off. And I don't know if that's because IG-11 said, "I am not a living thing." So he just kind of instantly went to, "Okay, it's okay." You know, because it, as much as droids are not living things, maybe it's because, you know, for so many episodes we knew that he hated IG-11 because IG-11 was going to kill him, and so he was way more accepting of him saying that he's not a living thing, because maybe he believed that anyways. But to me, droids do have that sense of a person, you know, that they are a living thing. You know, I have two droids tattooed on me because I love them so much, you know? So I just found that moment where he switched of it being okay a little quick, but at the same time it needed to be. And I did like the reveal of his, and you know, the back to spray was needed. And I'm like, okay, so that's how he's going to be healed. Okay. Because we knew he was not going to die.
Right. I was kind of hoping it'd be a different reason for it to come off. I was hoping Kara would take it off when she started to, because I wanted him to like have to sort of go, "Well, I can't put the helmet back on," you know, and maybe, you know, maybe go, "Well," and if they go off as a clan of two, then, "Well, I can do whatever I want to. I can take it off. I can put it on." But I, you know, he holds it. He does hold it so dearly that he's not going to do that. But I kind of want to see more of his face as we go along. Yeah. Have him be able to take it off and on, and I thought that might be a way to do it, but they didn't. So I was a little bit disappointed as far as that part goes. But there was a lot of death threats for all the people who were working together. They kept like threatening to kill each other. It was like, if you touch that baby, I will be forced to kill you. It's like, I understand. Get the grade off. I won't touch the baby. And then it was when IG-11 started to take the helmet off, he's like, I will kill you if you take this helmet off my head. So, you know, there's a lot of, they're quick with the death threats, I have to say. You know, it's maybe there's a sharp reprimand or a slap on the wrist we can start with. But no, it's death threats all over, but they still work together and really became a good team. So they go down, they get down into the sewers, and they find the empty Mandalorian armor. So, you know, if you watch those recaps at the beginning, it was setting everything up. Like, it showed you IG-11. It's like, oh, he's going to be part of the rescue of YOLO. Oh, there's all the Mandalorian covert. Yeah, they're going to come and help him. So it's like, we're going to go down there. They're going to have to escort us. They get down there, and I was shocked to see all their armor just piled up in a stack. So, Meg, how did that hit you?
I was like, did they die or did they leave? That was another confusing moment for me. I don't know why.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, I bet they all died. And now I'm really sad. And then the armor showed up and then I felt a little better. And then even I think she said she didn't know if they had survived. Am I correct?
Well,
or am I still confused?
She's like, no, you're pretty much right. It's just that I think most of them had been killed. She doesn't know if maybe a few survived, maybe escaped off planet. But for the most part, you know, at the very moment at least, the covert's broken apart, and whatever survivors they are, they can't really, they're not together and may not be able to find their way back to each other.
Right.
So Barb, how did you feel when you saw the stack of Mandalorian armor?
That was a processing moment for me. So I can be a slow processor, and I'm watching it, and Steve's next to me. He's like, what does that mean? I'm like, shh, because I don't let anybody talk when I'm watching something for the first time. And he's like, you're going to have to explain a lot when this episode's over. And so but in that moment, I was just like, where are they? Because it looked like they had all been slaughtered, and all that was left was their armor, and you know, she's melting it down. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just interpreted that because after she explained it, that some got away, but most of them were killed. That was a hard moment to realize. But at the same time, it's kind of funny because as I'm watching this, my concern is always with the child and the Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. And as long as they're okay, like not that everything else is acceptable. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But that's kind of where my concern is kind of like his, like he wants to protect that child at all costs. And I'm like, as long as they're good, you know, this other stuff is sad, but let's follow this main story. Then I guess I'm just not thinking about it too much, but I think because the possibilities of what happened to them is too much for me.
Yeah. And then that led to the moment that was your bounty moment, Barb, was as she is melting down the Beskar, and then she gives the signet, and she's explaining to us, but, you know, to the Mandalorian as well, like, hey, this is you're trying to get out of this, but you remember what the Creed says. You're a father to him until you reunite him with his own kind, or until until he comes of age. But in that whole discussion, this is what I was alluded to earlier when I'm talking about how this theme, and it's been mostly with droids, that, you know, we can overcome, droids can, and then by analogy, so can people, can overcome what maybe we have been told that we are because of where we were born or the people that we hang out with or because of our race or our gender or whatever, things that people assume about us and maybe we even think about ourselves because we hear it from other people. We can overcome that. Droids can overcome their programming, and that's been something that the Mandalorian has been having a hard time learning. And then the armorer here is talking about, you know, hey, I've heard of some things that you're talking about. We, the Mandalorians, had battles with sorcerers called Jedis. And so the Mandalorian just automatically goes, well, so he's an enemy, you know. And I think one of the best things she said was, His kind were, but not the individual. So again, sometimes when we have problems or we've had issues with somebody in the past, that doesn't mean that somebody who comes along and is similar to that mm-hmm. is going to be exactly the same way. We don't just lump people in groups and say, if you're part of this group, you're against me and I'm against you. It's we have to base it on the individuals and get to learn. So I think that's been a really good theme, and it's really come on here mostly toward the end of the season of we, you know, given people an opportunity to prove themselves and not just assume or prejudge who we think they are. So I like that, that as we went through that part of that episode. And like I said, Barb, you said that was your favorite part.
Yeah, getting the insignia, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even at one point, we'll get to that part later, but in a little bit, IG-11 is going to, you know, be told that, you know, you're a hunter. You know, all IGs are hunters. And he's like, well, not me. I'm reprogrammed. So, again, that whole theme of what the individual is, not what we think that they might be. So,
I thought what was interesting about, I mean, that part, whole part was interesting, but mm-hmm. the armorer made it a point to say that Baby Yoda was not strong enough or too weak to mm-hmm. become a Mandalorian. So pretty much you're going to have to go and find his people. And I'm like,
right.
Are we doing this? Like, are we actually going to mm-hmm. find the Yoda species? Because if we are, I'm on board for that.
Yeah, that would be cool. I don't think there's going to be many. In
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what season two is going to start out being. And it's going to kind of be similar to what we've been doing. We're going to be going around the galaxy looking for clues about maybe a way to get Yolo to his species. Can we figure out what species he is? How do we get to them if we can figure it out? And at the same time, we're going to be being pursued by Moff Gideon. And so setting up kind of similar stuff that we had in the past, this past season, but at least it's more of a direction. In the past, we're just like, we don't know what we're going to do. We got to try to figure out a place to put this kid. Now it's, all right, I'm his father, mm-hmm. and we are going to, he's going to be mine. Now, he ages so slowly, when he comes of age, it might be, the Mandalorian might be dead of natural causes. So, you know, he's going to have to pass him on or find his own people, but that'll be kind of where the story's going. But the armorer kind of says, I'm not coming with you. I'm going to stay behind. And then she brutally just massacres five
yeah.
stormtroopers.
That was insane.
In the best way possible.
I loved that.
She's got a hammer and she's got a tong, whatever you want, you know. And that she doesn't even have a gun mm-hmm. and she's smacking them around. So, Barb, what did you feel about the armorer after she said, look, I'm going to take it. I'm not even going to use a blaster or anything. I'm just going to use these two tools in my hand.
It absolutely makes me love Mandalorians even more than I already do. And, like, at one point, she mm-hmm. smashes the mask mm-hmm. of one of the stormtroopers. And I'm like, wow. Like, I've never, you know, you see stormtroopers get killed all the time, but you never see their face. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was cool because you still don't see their face, but the fact that she could was really intriguing to me after she smashed that mask. But she, yeah, that was this whole episode. But like that, I love that part.
Yeah, the one that shocked me was how she just dumped that guy in the
furnace.
He melted immediately. It's like he's no Beskar. He's wearing Plastoid and he's human body. So it's just like. It's like he just melted right away, and I was like, ooh, that looked painful. But he doesn't. So,
yeah.
But the bottom line is you don't mess. Even, like, you know, she's the armorer, and it's almost like you think about the Old West, because these are kind of like Westerns, and it's like she's the blacksmith. And it's like, you know, you don't mess with the gunslingers mm-hmm. and all that stuff. But, the blacksmith, yeah, he's just there working. He's not going to. So you kind of think maybe the same of her. Is like, well, she's not holding weapons or anything. She's not threatening anybody. She's keeping everybody peaceful. But it's like, no, it doesn't matter who you are in Mandalore. You can whoop anybody that comes along. So I really enjoyed that. Well, so they end up getting to the Lava River, which is, I mean, clearly just the river Styx. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ferryman and everything, you know. So we get to the Lava River, and we start having some some interesting moments there. So I'll just throw it to Meg. Meg, as they're going down that lava river and before they run into the stormtroopers, there's some talking going on. How did that make you feel, and what was maybe your favorite part of that part of the episode?
Well, first of all, I have to say I was kind of creeped out that R2 unit had legs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, and mm-hmm. these long well,
that's not,
arms.
That's not the first one we had. That's not the first one we had. If you remember the fishing, the farmers with the little fishing village, that was, and it was harder to see that clearly, but that was an astromech with longer legs.
That
and
did not
net,
make an
so.
Impression in that episode until this episode, too. I was like, and
when you're traveling to Hades, yeah. it makes it a little scarier, I guess.
What's the mythological character's name that drives the boat on the River Styx? I don't remember. Anyway.
I don't know.
Anyway, it was creeping me out.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Well, because he wouldn't respond either.
What was that?
Well, he wouldn't respond when they told
true.
Him to stop.
Yeah.
Kara just takes his head off. it was really intense. Like, they were really going down that river slowly. And mm-hmm. they're like, all right, we're. And Grief says. And I'm like, when somebody says this, like it's not, we're home free, or however he puts it, we're home free, we can see the end of the tunnel. And I'm like, no, you say that and you're never home free. And then of course the Mandalorian puts on his special visors and sees that they're stormtroopers. So there was a moment I was kind of like, who's going to die at this point? Because mm-hmm. they're not all getting out of here.
Yeah. So how did that part hit you, Barb?
So are we talking about the dialogue before they get to the mouth of the cave?
Yeah, from when they got in the boat till right before they got out of the cave.
Yeah, so I know there was, again, only watched it once. You. So I know they were talking mm-hmm. while they were on the boat. You know, what stands out to me is the astromech droid rowing the boat. And then I know the Mandalorian said something about, you know, handed baby to Cara Dune, mm-hmm. I think, or maybe IG-11 mm-hmm. did. And, you know, as far as the dialogue, I just can't remember exactly what was said in that moment.
Well the part that got me the most, and it kind of goes with what I talked about earlier about, you know, thinking that droids could overcome their programming, it was that IG-11 is like, the only way for us to protect the baby is for me to sacrifice myself, and the Mandalorian saying, no, there's got to be another way. We need you. And sounding very sincere and almost choked up. And the thing, it's kind of funny, Star Wars, you know, you think about K2SO also, mm-hmm. you know, when droids die, and we talk about, well, they're not really alive, they're not human, but when droids die, it can be some of the saddest parts of, you know, the show that you're watching particularly. So, you know, but him sacrificing himself and saying, you know, if you tell me you could take care of the child, that's my primary function or my primary goal. I can skip down to my secondary goal, which is not to be captured alive and blow everybody mm-hmm. else up out there.
And see, what I found interesting about that was that he said that was the one part of his original programming that was still intact, mm-hmm. you know, and the Mandalorian did question that, like mm-hmm. you were reprogrammed. And he said, I still cannot be captured mm-hmm. because that's ingrained in yeah. something. And so, you know, that moment at the end when he does sacrifice himself, I found that very moving, considering he tried to kill himself about 5 times in the first episode. Yeah. I need to self-destruct. No, don't self-destruct, yeah. you know. But for this time, it was so much more of a sacrifice for noble reasons mm-hmm. to save, you know, his primary objective was the child. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there's so many moments when a droid dies that it really is moving. You know, I keep thinking mm-hmm. of L3 in mm-hmm. Solo.
Yeah.
Like, that was mm-hmm. a heart-wrenching moment. So, yeah, that's where I go back to. I don't agree with them not being a living thing.
Yeah.
Because Star Wars has really done droids well.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so IG-88 walks to the end, says, well, I can't be captured. I must blow myself up, and just that was a bigger bomb than I mm-hmm. thought it was. But he takes out what seems to be the rest of the stormtroopers. So Moff Gideon comes flying over now when Kara and the Mandalorian and Grief get out of the tunnel with Yolo, and he's flying over in a TIE fighter shooting at him. which this was almost my favorite moment, my almost bounty moment, when it's like Grief's like, well, let's make the baby do the magic hand thing.
And he looks over. He's like, okay.
Yeah. He looks over and goes, hey, baby, do the hands. And the funny thing about it was he didn't just hold up his five-fingered hands. He put two fingers down so that only three were up. So he was actually having a Yoda-looking hand. He's like, do the hand thing. It was cracking me up. I was like, I'm loving Grief Karga.
Yeah.
And Yellow just waves at him. He's like, well, I'm all out of ideas. You know, that's my only idea, magic hands. And so...
Well, this moment also brings, like, we didn't mention the fact that the blacksmith gave the Mandalorian his rocket pack.
Oh, right.
I had that.
So that's where that comes in, is in this moment.
Mm-hmm. And he's not supposed to be able to use it yet. He's not strong enough. He's injured. And he's got to train for it to really work. So he's got to heal up. Then he's got to train to be good with it. But...
Yeah.
That's the only thing he's got. So it's like, I'm going to zip up there. And I love jetpacks. I'm a jetpack fan. So I was excited to see the jetpack. So he gets up there and he taxis himself to the TIE fighter and he puts a couple of bombs on it and blows it up. So, you know, exciting scene there. So then it seems to be that we've gotten rid of all the Imperial presence on the planet. How did you feel at the end as the three adults, at least in the conversation, talked about what they plan to do, Barb?
It was interesting because, you know, again, this is me. I can't let go of things that are going on in films or in TV shows that I see. And I'm like, they're talking about this guy being dead. And I know he's not dead, you know. And I'm like, you're going to stay on this planet because I know that Moff Gideon is not dead.
Yeah.
So that's kind of going through my head. But at the same time, I really liked where it was going when it came to these three main characters. And, you know, Grief Karga and Cara Dune, they walk off... Did I say those right? I think I did. But they walk off together. I'm like, okay, this show is going places.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mandalorian goes off with the child into a ship. And what was it he said? There was a moment where he looked back at the child in the ship.
Mm-hmm. He had the... He had given the necklace of...
Oh, yeah, the necklace. Yeah. The necklace.
He had given it to Kara. It's like, this will get you to the Mandalorians, and they'll know that you came from me. And then Yellow has it on. He's like, yeah, why don't you keep that for a while? Because you know, I never thought I'd see this again. And you could tell it meant a lot to him. And he's like, why don't you keep it for a while?
And I love that, because that's the Mandalorian symbol. And it's just that part. Like, I knew there was an important part there. And I absolutely love that.
Oh, yeah. So, Meg, when you see Cara Dune to hang out and stay with Grief Karga, especially as emotional as she seemed to get when the Mandalorian was trying to say, just let me die, she's like, no, you hang in there. You know, there seems to be a real connection there. I'm not necessarily saying romantic, but there is, you know, a good partnership that could really be developed there. And then she just is like, I'm going to hang out here with maybe Grief Karga. He can get my chain code maybe where I don't set off alarms when I travel. And I'll be here and I'll stay here and be a bounty hunter for a while. That disappointed me. How did you feel when she's like, I'm going to be just a recurring character. I'm not going to be an every episode character.
I mean, yeah, I guess there's a little disappointment there because I do really like her and I like their dynamic. But I think it wouldn't make sense. Like, three's a crowd kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. It really, this journey is meant for the clan of two. And I think probably she appreciated that. I think if he would have asked her, she'd have been like, hell yeah, I'm coming, you know? But I think that at that point, that was where she was meant to be, and the Mandalorian and Baby Yoda were meant to go off and sort of figure out their relationship and figure out what they were supposed to do next. So while, a little disappointing, I think it makes the most sense.
I mean, that's clearly John Favreau and Filoni and other people who are running the show, that's clearly what they wanted. They wanted to be just those two kind of developing their relationship and trying to get through things. But to me, if you add that third person in with Cara Dune on a regular basis, and maybe even Grief Karga, I think there would be more interesting things you could do as far as stories in the future, like, you know, especially with her chain code being something that could get her thrown in prison forever. Is she ever tempted to, hey, look, you help us, you turn them in, help us catch these people, we'll clear up your record, you know, things like that. Greef Karga may be getting tempted by other people that he's worked for in the past and has had relationships with. So, you know, and they can still do it, I guess, because we know we're going to run into these characters again.
Oh,
but
sure.
I just think it leads to a lot more tension we could have on a more weekly basis when the next season appears. And that is it. They just, Mando flies off and nothing else happens. That's the end of the episode.
Oh, Carl.
Yeah, right. You remember that thing I said? I'm like, I'm the one that knows that they're not,
yeah,
that guy's
sort
not
of like
dead.
A thing in Star Wars. Nobody checks. Nobody checks if the person in the spaceship is dead or not.
Mm-hmm. The funny thing,
not even the Jawas. Yeah. The Jawas are already taking the ship apart. Oh, yeah. They haven't bothered to look inside.
It's funny, every time something goes down, it explodes. I mean, when, you know, we had stormtroopers from the First Order in The Rise of Skywalker flying around, and one jetpack gets out of control, he hits the rock wall, and he explodes. I mean, they always explode, and it's like that one just kind of hit the ground and didn't explode. And it's like, yeah, he survived that. So when the dark saber came out, Barb, how long did it take you to figure out what it was, and then how did you feel?
Oh, as soon as I saw it, I knew exactly what it was. Before I even saw him come out, I saw the black blade. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it's the dark saber.
Yeah.
And like, my kids know it too, because they watch Rebels with me. They're like, Mommy! I'm like, I know, shh!
Yeah.
You know, like, because it's my... I cannot stand when people talk, and I know I'm horrible, but I'm... You know, and I was just as excited as them, but I needed to process and think. Like, oh my gosh, when was the last time we saw the Darksaber? Sabine had it, and she gave it to somebody. Who did she give it to? I can't remember.
Yeah.
So I looked it up, because I'm like, how did he get a hold of the Darksaber? Because there is so much from the Clone Wars and Rebels in relation to this Darksaber. And this moment is so good. I'm actually kind of curious... People who are watching this show who have not watched the Clone Wars or Rebels, I wonder what this moment was like for them. Because for me, it was everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's tying it into all of, you know, you can tell that the story, what's it called? The story people.
The story group.
The story group. You know that the story group are really working together. You know that Dave Filoni is really working with Jon Favreau on this. And I just absolutely love that. And so, of course, immediately I looked up online the Darksaber to remember exactly the history of what happened and who had it last. So Sabine had given it to Bo-Katan. And that's the last that we knew of it. And Bo-Katan, she became the head of Mandalore, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But that was before A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is all after Return of the Jedi. So we're talking about, what is that, 8 to 10? Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly the span. It could be 15 years.
Yeah.
There's just time. So it's just going to be interesting to know the story about what happened.
Well, the thing that they keep telling us that's happened that we haven't seen, and I think we're going to get that story, because I think Moff Gideon is going to be just the overarching villain of the series, at least season two, but I think he's going to be the big bad of the whole series. You know, he was there at the Purge. What was the Purge? I think the Mandalorian, Din Djarin, will take that personally, as far as he wiped out just about all the other Mandalorians at that time. And he must have been pretty high up as far as being in charge of the operation, because he walked away with the trophy of the Darksaber. So I think that's going to be something that they're both going to really not like each other, to put it like the best way possible. They're both going to have reasons that they want to kill the other one and find the other one. So I think it's going to be an adversarial relationship that's going to carry on through the rest of the seasons. So Meg, do you have anything to add about the Darksaber?
I'm just really curious to find out what happened. I think potentially Moff Gideon could show up in the last season of the Clone Wars because of that connection, which would be really cool. I'm all for, like, you know, like with...
crossover.
What's his name in Rogue One? You know, coming from... the Clone Wars to...
Saw Gerrera.
Thank you! Saw Gerrera, yes. Saw Gerrera. So, you know, maybe it's it's Moff Gideon, you know, showing up in animated, which would be cool. I really love those connections. But I'm really curious. He's very, you could tell his character's just a very obsessive character. He's obsessed with getting Baby Yoda for whatever reason. He's obsessed with knowing things. Like, he knew that these people were together, but they have really haven't been together that long, and he knew all about them. So his backstory is going to be really interesting too.
Yeah. All right. You got anything else? Any final thoughts about the episode, Barb?
I think this is in my top episodes for the season. I mean, we've got 8 episodes, but this is definitely, you know, in the top 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a great episode. All right. We'll be back to wrap it up.
Jetpack is ready in case I need to take a flight. Got my trusty blasters and I'm itching to start a fight. If my bounty escapes, then I guess I just won't get paid. These are the days when a honest fortune can be made. Just another Mando fun day. Sweating in the sun day. Shooting my gun day. My prayer's gonna run day. It's just another Mando fun day. Ahead of IG-88, I got to make the bounty all mine. Other hunters want it, they're all trying to cut in line. It takes so long cause RSing doesn't fight fair. Outdueled Cap Aim, but Bossk is already there. It's just another Mando fun day. Sweating in the sun day. Shooting my gun day. My prey is gonna run day. It's just another Mando fun day.
Alright, so we're back. We have finished the first season of The Mandalorian. We were earlier in our series, we would talk about what from the show might show up or affect the Rise of Skywalker. Hey, we've already seen that now, and we know only thing we really saw was maybe the force healing, but nothing really else that we could see. But so we're going to move on to another question of where do we want this show to go from here, or what would we expect for season 2? And we'll start with Meg.
Just a continued amazing storytelling with awesome characters. Let's not kill them off right away all the time, you know.
Yes.
We'd like to keep some of those cool characters going. And I'm really more interested in, you know, more Mandalore, finding out what really happened, finding Baby Yoda species, and more about Moff Gideon as well.
Barb?
Yeah, I think I'll just reiterate exactly what Meg said. I think there's also part of me that, you know, when it comes to Baby Yoda, there's all this, like, there's this possibility of him being a clone of Yoda, and I really want to find out more about that, because we saw in the second episode the Doctor had the symbol of the cloners, so it's really interesting because there may not be any more species of Yoda, and just to find out more about that and what the future is going to be for him with the Mandalorian, because right now, you know, the two of them are one clan together. And I'm just looking forward to seeing that relationship between the two of them and what they're going to do, and still bring in the characters of Cara Dune and, you know, all the great characters here and there in the episodes to just be great storytelling and a great series. It already is a great series. And yeah, I can't wait for season 2.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, we're going to have some interesting things coming season two. I guess we're just going to, like you said, we're going to learn more about Moff Gideon and more about what's happened in the past as far as to the Mandalorians themselves. And then maybe, you know, we always talk about, especially after Return of the Jedi, Luke or Luke and Leia forming maybe a Jedi Academy, you know, Rey doing something like that now, something to where she could teach or they could teach Force users. So it's almost like we don't know how many Mandalorians are left, how many people are pledging allegiance to the creed of Mandalore, but I'd like to see maybe the Mandalorian here and Baby Yoda sort of maybe start a whole another branch of it and maybe get some followers and kind of start another community of Mandalorians. And as they teach them, we kind of learn how it's supposed to go too. So I'd like to see them get some followers as well. Yeah. Well, that about wraps it up this week. So we appreciate y'all, everybody listening. We appreciate especially our patrons, everybody who supports us. We couldn't do it without you. Just thank everybody who's listened. If you have any questions or anything, just shoot us a text, shoot us an email. I'm carlhassler.usw@gmail.com. We're going to maybe try to have one more episode just to recap a bunch of the series as a whole with more voices and more people involved. We'll see, but otherwise, we've enjoyed it. We appreciate you listening, and we'd love to hear from you. Other than that, may the Force be with you.
Unmistakably Star Wars is a member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Explore more great content and get to know our sister shows at WeAreEscapePods.com and on Twitter at WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.
This party's over.
Move along. Move along.